So, as promised, now today we're going to talk more about the first part of the title, namely the asymptotics, and mainly focus on the cellular networks. So this is the menu. Now I'll introduce a basic model for cellular networks, which is the HIP model, which stands for Homogeneous Independent Poisson. We look at a couple of semi-advanced, I would say, transmission techniques for that model. See how that works now in this Poisson case. But then the main part will be on a approximative framework to deal with the non-Poisson case now. So this is the sub-menu. Now we'll introduce the idea of a horizontal shift of SIR distributions. And to do that, we'll introduce a new point process, which I call the relative distance process. And then there are two new deterministic quantities that we need to quantify that shift, the first one being the mean interference to signal ratio, and the second one being the expected fading to interference ratio. And then we characterize the asymptotic gains or shifts between two distributions, give a few examples now, and in the end we'll see where we are with the homework. So this is where we left off yesterday. So this is the generic cellular model in the downlink. Now we have a stationary and ergodic point process. These are the red guys. Now they all transmit at equal power, including the blue guy. No, but we assume that the user situated at the origin here is served by the closest base station, which would be that blue one, and everybody else is active. So we have frequency reuse one in this system. So here is a different representation of what's going on now in this system, where we have strongest base station association on average, now not including fading, so this is just proximity. So every user is associated with the base station whose Voronoi cell it is located at. So if we have a user here near the center, this user has one friend. Now that's the one serving base station, has a lot of unfriendly base stations. So we take all the friendly power, put it in a numerator. We take all the unfriendly power, put it in the denominator, and we have the signal to interference ratio. So that's the setup now with this IID fading, and X0 here would be the serving base station, so the green one here in the middle. So let's look at the typical user now on her typical morning walk here from the left to the right and see what kind of SIRs she experiences here on the right, plotted without fading at the moment. Now, so she starts here, and the moment she hits the edge, now the boundaries of cells, now there is a drop in signal strength, and then she is in relatively good shape for a while here, and then she is in bad shape here for a longer stretch because she's essentially moving along a Voronoi edge, and in the end she gets very close to a base station, so we have a peak here. So this is the kind of fluctuation in the SIR we observe without fading. And then on top of that, we add the small scale or fast fading. We get the purple curve. We get the faster fluctuation. Now we are wondering now if we do a long walk or we consider a large region, or what is the fraction of that region that is covered at least at the threshold theta. Now, so this is exactly just a complementary cumulative distribution of the SIR at theta. So that's our success probability, or this CCDF, now, which is just the probability that we exceed the threshold theta. From the user point of view, now if users are distributed in a uniform way, it is also the fraction of users that exceed a threshold theta in the network. And that will be for each realization of the base station and user processes using ergodicity. Here is a fact on SIR distributions. Now it's kind of a negative fact. Now it says only really the Poisson process is tractable in some cases. So if we have Rayleigh fading, now we have seen this formula yesterday, now that's one of the celebrated results that we get, and in particular alpha equal to 4 or delta equal to 1/2, we get the arctangent. Now if the fading is not Rayleigh, or if the point process is not Poisson, things get difficult very quickly. So we're going to enjoy the beauty of Poissonia a little longer. Now this is a Poissonia flower, so this is the Poisson world, and we're going to enjoy a little longer now. So we are generalizing the single-tier model into a multi-tier model. That's what we call the HIP model, which was introduced here, you know, by Harpreet, Jeff, Radha, and Francois a couple of years ago. So how does this model look? Now we start with the homogeneous Poisson process here. This one has intensity 6. And then we choose a desired number of tiers, say 3, and we choose an intensity for each tier so that they add up to 6. So we have, a macro tier of intensity 1, then we have a small tier of intensity 2, and a femto tier of intensity 3. And then we randomly color these base stations to assign them to the different tiers according to the relative densities here. Now, so we'll have 1/6 are going to be macro, 1/3 are going to be small, and 1/2 are going to be femtos. So this is the system that we end up with, now with this random coloring. And then we also assign arbitrary power levels to the different tiers. Now, the macros might transmit at 46 dBm, and the femtos at 23 or something like that. Now, that's a very nice model because it's doubly independent in the sense that there is no dependence between base stations in a single tier, and there is no dependence between base stations across tiers. So that makes it very tractable. And in fact, no, it turns out that from the SIR point of view, all these HIP models are equivalent. No. So from the perspective of the typical user, this is exactly the same as a single-tier Poisson model with unit power and unit intensity. So there is no reason to actually consider anything more complicated. So for all HIP models with Rayleigh fading and power law, the SIR distribution is always given by this expression here with the hypergeometric function. Now, there's one point, I think, that is of particular interest. Now, if we look at the target SIR of 10 dB, which is a reasonable number, we get exactly 20.00%. No. So that's a good number to remember. No, but now, if we think in terms of the typical user, now, if you ask the typical user on the street, then she would not be impressed with this performance. Because, yeah, 20% now is clearly too low, no, and 10 dB is not that much to ask for. So we'll have to think about ways to improve upon that. So here is an explanation why all these models are equivalent, and this has a lot to do with what Bartek talked about yesterday, namely that essentially what matters are the received powers. Now, so we can define the same way he did it yesterday, we can define a point process on the positive real line of received powers. They could include fading or not, depending on what we're going to do with it. And then we can show that this is, again, a non-homogeneous, in this case, Poisson process. If we have multiple independent Poisson tiers, we can just add these intensities up. No? So in the end, we get the Poisson process with this intensity function. But the only thing that really matters here is the dependence of this intensity on R. So in all cases, we have proportionality to R to the delta minus 1. And that's the only thing that matters because the pre-constant doesn't matter. No, we are interested in SIR, so simply scaling the network doesn't change anything because we are scaling the desired power and the interference power in the same way. No. Yeah, so this is what is sometimes called pass loss process or propagation process. And it's a key ingredient now in many of the proofs now that have appeared for results on cellular networks. And it turns out that this is not just restricted now to single-tier or multi-tier models, but it also holds for advanced transmission techniques such as base station cooperation or silencing or diversity schemes. And so we're going to have a look at some of these now, keeping in mind that they apply in general to this HIP model with arbitrary densities and transmit powers and number of tiers. So the first one is what we call base station silencing. No? So instead of having enemies all around ourselves, now we neutralize some of them, no? So that they don't cause any trouble. So they don't help us, no, but they don't bother us either. So yeah, there's a connection to the Swiss flag now for neutrality. So the strongest base station on average here is still the serving one, and the next n minus 1 are silenced in that particular resource block that is being used to serve the typical user. Now, this model can include shadowing, no, which doesn't matter. It stays constant over time. Now, everything is just hidden in that pre-constant. That doesn't matter, no, as Bartek pointed out yesterday. So how does this result look? If we silence the n-1 strongest interferers, No, so you have to calculate the standard power from the serving one divided by the power of all the ones beyond the nth one. And what we end up with is an expression of that type. So it's a integral just from 0 to 1, not infinite, but we have in the denominator, now we have an exponent n of a hypergeometric function. No. So it's not too bad. No, it's not difficult to evaluate. No, that's the kind of expressions we can expect in this situation when dealing with the Poisson model. Here's another thing we could try and do now is to use intra-cell diversity. Now, so instead of just using one resource block, the base station uses multiple resource blocks that have independent fading. Now, so this could be across frequencies or it could be across times. Now, if the serving base station uses m such resource blocks to serve the user, now and then we have the success probability is the probability that the SAR in at least one of them exceeds the target threshold. Now, so that is this union here. We get a simple result, now again, for the joint success probability, which is of that form. So instead of having a 1 here, we just have an m here. Oh. Quite simple generalization. And then the desired result, of course, follows from inclusion-exclusion. So if we compare these two techniques, now, so on the left-hand side, we see what we obtain from silencing. Now, the blue curve here, that's just the standard Poisson curve without any silencing. And then we get these dashed curves if we silence 1, 2, 3, 4 base stations. Now, this is assuming that all the other base stations still use all their resource blocks all the time. But if the typical user now has the benefit of having certain base stations silenced, then this would apply to all the users in the network in general. Now, so if we take into account that all other base stations are also silenced in some of the resource blocks, we get a larger benefit now, which would be the solid curves here, so corresponding to this parameter kappa equal to n. On the right, we have the situation of using diversity over m resource blocks, and we see that these curves, now they converge to one faster, now which is just a fact, now a consequence of the fact that we have a diversity gain of m in this system, now, but on the tail, they look more or less the same. So if we compare the two, if we want to tell the operator which one you should use, now it really depends a lot on the target SAR because of the diversity gain here. As soon as the SAR threshold is small, now we have a clear benefit from using diversity. Whereas if we look at the high theta regime, then it might be beneficial now to just rely on essentially the power or SAR gain from silencing. Now, it is noticeable here, now in this system, and we retransmit over multiple slots, we actually get a diversity gain. Now, in contrast to the bipolar model, where this was not the case. Now, so here we actually get diversity from retransmissions, and that's because of the fact, now there is no really strong interferer. Now, because if there was a base station really close, it would be the desired one. Now, so the strongest interferer can never be stronger on average than the target base station in contrast to the bipolar model.
What are the dotted lines on the left plot?
Yeah, so these are the ones, no, when you assume that all the other base stations are still fully active in the silencing. No, so the typical user would be the only one in the system that benefits from silencing. But if you assume that all users in the network benefit from silencing a bunch of other base stations, then the overall load and the overall interference in the network would be reduced, no, and you get to the solid curve. So then you get a higher benefit, but of course you get a reduction in the number of users you can serve, no, because you're using up essentially resource blocks, no, just to get rid of interference instead of serving other users. No, so their realistic curve, no, would be the solid one, but that comes at the capacity loss. Yeah.
Excuse me.
Yes.
For the right curve, if you use multiple resource blocks, do you consider the interference for each resource block are the same or different?
They change, no, because each resource block you use is subject to different interference from the other base stations. because their fading, now the fading from the other base stations is also different across each resource block. Okay, so next thing, now we're trying to do a little better and actually have the guys around us to help. Now, so they should jointly with the serving base station, now they should transmit the same signal so that we not only get the reduction in the interference, but we are actually boosting the received signal power. So here is the model. So we let the users receive combined signals from the n strongest, again on average, or n nearest base station if we have a single tier. So this is the set of cooperating base stations, is this calligraphic C. We have Rayleigh fading, and base stations use non-coherent joint transmission. No, so we don't assume we have actually knowledge of channel states or in particular phases at the base stations. So we let, essentially, we let physics do its job of superposition. So if we have the amplitude fading coefficients, which are, now in terms of amplitude, they are zero mean unit variance complex Gaussian, we just let physics do the superposition at the receiver, so we get the superposition of that form, which means the power now would be just the magnitude of that, which is nice because in the end of the day, the signal is still exponential, so we still have effectively Rayleigh fading. We just have a power boost, no, according to the transmit powers here. And then the interference stems from all the other base stations, no, that are not cooperating. So what can we say in this case? Now we need to introduce a vector u and then a normalized version of it, u bar, and then a certain norm of it. We have the standard function f of x now, which could be expressed in a hypergeometric way. And then we have to evaluate this integral now over this n-dimensional order cone. Again, that takes a little bit of work to calculate this, but it's not that big of a problem, and we get these curves here. The blue again is the standard Poisson curve, joint transmission from two base stations, joint transmission from three base stations. So these are the kind of results, now kind of representative of what can be done in the Poisson case. Now, so it's not perfectly closed form, but it's something now that we can evaluate relatively easily. So the big question is now, what is possible outside the nice world of Poissonia? And actually, yeah, I enjoyed Laurent's talk from before, you know, because I have a little result here for the Ginibre process. When he said, no, Ginibre is nice, it's very simple. It's all relative. No. So it is, I would agree that it's probably the second simplest model we could imagine, at least on the repulsive side. But here is what the coverage probability looks like. Now, so we have about three infinite integrals, and then we have an infinite product and an infinite sum, and this is a real headache if you try to evaluate this numerically. No. You might better off just running a simulation, maybe. No, so it's really not that easy. The derivation of this is relatively straightforward. Now, using Kostland's theorem, the equivalence of the distances to the origin to a set of independent gamma variates. Now it gives you this result, you know, in a relatively straightforward way, but it's just, this is as far as we can push it now, and that's the probably the only other model where we can even write something in exact analytical manner. No. So what do we do with that? No, we cannot really evaluate this, and it can only get worse. No, this is the second simplest model. Okay, so here is an observation on these distributions. If you pick a random paper that discusses cellular networks, now there is, I would say, about a 60% chance that you will find a figure that looks like this. No. So someone plots an SIR distribution and says, okay, if we don't do anything smart, or if we just do the smartest thing that has been done so far, we get this blue curve. But now we have these great ideas, and we actually get this curve, or even that one, or even the cyan one at the end. No. But if we look at this now, what we can observe is that they just appear to be horizontally shifted versions of each other. So here is a plot from a paper by my student Anjin when we started to explore this notion of shifting. You know? So this is a Poisson process, then we have a Poisson hardcore process, we have a Strauss process, we have some experimental data. No big difference. No, it seems to be just a little bit of a shift. No, and so we call that shift deployment gains because it results from doing a little bit smarter base station deployments than just the Poisson ones. So, we developed this idea now of actually doing an approximate analysis of the SIR distribution just based on the Poisson curve and applying a little bit of a shift.
No. But a counterexample is this M diversity.
I will come to that. This always works as long as the schemes or the deployments you're comparing have the same diversity gain. No. But I'll get back to that. Yeah. So, if indeed the curves were just shifted, now if this is the Poisson curve, we can take, say, the red curve, and it would simply be the Poisson curve where we just scale the threshold theta by the gain g, which would be this shift now in the logarithmic or dB scale. So we call this the SIR shift or the SIR gain or just the gap between the curves. So if we step back for a moment and don't assume yet that this gap is actually constant, of course we can define the gap as a function of the threshold theta in this form here. And also we take the corresponding Poisson probability and then we invert the new curve that we are interested in. We divide by theta. So what we are doing here, and now say we take minus 5, we go here, and then we go to the right. And also we invert, and then we go down, and we get this gap between the two curves. So then, of course, now we could write the success probability in general just as the Poisson probability divided by this gain as a function of theta. No? If we make this gain a function of theta, then it's trivial that we can always do that. But now, let's define the asymptotic gains as we let theta go to zero on the one hand, so we call this G0, and as we let theta go to infinity on the right end, on the tail end, which we call G infinity. No. Now, if those limits exist, now, which they will always do in the models we are interested in, then asymptotically, now, any success probability is just a Poisson 1 shifted by the G0 on the left side, and the same thing on the right side. Now, so the observation now can be encoded as follows. The observation is that G of theta is essentially G0 for all theta. So a shift by the asymptotic gain at zero results in an approximation that is quite accurate over the entire distribution. And that is quite remarkable, no, because when we use any standard type of an approximation, no, like just Taylor expansion or a Padet approximation as has been used, of course it always becomes more and more inaccurate if we go to the other end of the distribution. No. So we can essentially never expect something to hold reasonably well, no, for both from zero to infinity, no. But this seems to be the case here, at least just visually. So here are a couple of examples. This is the deployment gain of a square lattice. So we simulate the curve for the square lattice, which would be the solid red one. The blue one is the Poisson one. If we shift the Poisson one by the gain G0 for the lattice, evaluated by simulation, no, but that is fast, we get the dashed curve here. So we see, you know, we know asymptotically it's exact, oh, but we see that this is actually very close. It gets a little bit off, but then again, we are actually closer again. No. If the Poisson's exponent is 4 on the right side, now we are actually doing a little bit better, even down to 10 dBs, even down to 40% or 30% success probability, now we have a very good match. Now, in principle, no, this gain should depend on the path loss exponent, but it turns out, now, if we run the simulation accurately, you know, we get 3.19 dB gain. If alpha is equal to 3, we get 3.14 dB gain if alpha is equal to 4. So that's quite nice, no, because we can argue that, okay, if we take a 3 dB gain, no, which is essentially what we have, which corresponds to a gain of 2, we get a very accurate approximation, no, for the deployment gain of the square lattice, or the SIR distribution of the square lattice. Now we just take the arctangent result, we replace theta by theta divided by 1/2, and we get the best approximation that I have seen so far in this case. No, just a 3 dB gain going from Poisson to square lattice. Here is the, so this is not restricted to just deployment. No, we can also apply this to some of these advanced techniques that say joint transmission. So we have a single base station case, and then we have joint transmission evaluating this integral I've shown before, gives the solid curve, applying the gain, the G0 gain, we get the dashed curve. And in this case, now because it's also based on the Poisson model, we can actually calculate the gain. That's 2.33, so we get a little bit more than a 3 dB gain using a joint transmission from two base stations. Now, so from the point of view of the user, she sees a little bit better performance from joint transmission with two base stations in the Poisson case than she would sitting in a square lattice deployment. So here this is actually called MISR-based gain, and we'll see why in a moment. But for that, we first need to introduce this quantity here. That's the ISR. So this is the interference to average signal ratio, where we have the interference as before in the numerator. In the denominator, we take the signal strength, the signal power, but averaged over the fading. So that's the quantity. So the S bar here. Now, the bar just indicates that the average over something, and in this case, that would be the fading. Now, the ISR is a random variable because of the positions of the base stations, now that are a point process. But its mean is a function of just the network geometry, now, because when we take the mean of this, all the fading random variables in the numerator go away because they are all normalized to 1. So if the desired base station is at distance r and all the interfering ones are at distance rk, now the mean of this ISR is r to the alpha times this sum. That's the interference. Now, but the hks are all independent, which doesn't even matter. No, and they are normalized to 1. So essentially we get the sum over these expected relative distances raised to the power alpha. No, so that is this MISR quantity. Why is it relevant? Now, so let's focus at Rayleigh fading for the moment and calculate the outage probability as theta goes to 0. So that's, again, now that is the standard expression for SIR smaller than theta in this case, now putting the interference on the right side. Now we take r to the minus alpha on the right side and we recognize this ISR quantity. So from that, we already see now that this outage probability, or conversely, the success probability, would be just the Laplace transform of this ISR random variable. But here, we want to let theta go to 0. So if we condition on it, we would get this. So if we decondition, we get this proportionality. So the outage probability is just the threshold times this MISR quantity here that we have defined. Which means, in turn, that the asymptotic gain relative to the Poisson process is just the ratio of these two MISRs. No, so this is the MISR of the Poisson process divided by the MISR of the new technique, transmission technique, or non-Poisson process. Now, kind of as expected, now for the Poisson process, we can actually calculate this MISR quantity in a relatively straightforward way. That's just 2 divided by alpha minus 2, or in terms of delta, it is in this form, or if you like a geometric series, you can expand this. So, yeah, this is the acronym, now, so we call this ASAP, the approximate SIR analysis based on the Poisson process. Now, the question is, of course, now we have observed this, we can calculate this gain at 0, or we can simulate it, but we would like to do a little bit more. You know? So we would like to explain why this is so unreasonably effective, you know, over the entire range of theta. And for that, now we also have to look at the gain at infinity and to see if it's in any way close to the gain at 0. So, and then maybe now we can say something about the shape of the SIR distributions by comparing the asymptotics, now, and say, okay, yeah, everything is really just a shift within a small range. Now, and then there is the question, how sensitive are these gains to the path loss exponent alpha and maybe the fading model? Now, so this is very recent work. Now, we just put up some results, you know, with my former student Radha Ganti on archives. This just appeared last week on archive. So we don't have all the answers, obviously, no, but we are giving some initial insight why it works and how to quantify in particular also the gain at infinity. So, but first now we like to introduce this new point process. So this is what we call the relative distance process. So instead of dealing with just the two-dimensional regular stationary point process of base stations, we take the one that is closest to the origin, and then we just take the distances, so the distance to the nearest one divided by the distances to all the others. Now, so now we get a nice one-dimensional point process that actually sits in the 0-1 interval. Now, with that, we can express this ISR random variable just as this sum, and its average will be the average of this. Now we can apply Campbell's formula, we get this expression here. And if we start with the stationary Poisson process in two dimensions, now we can calculate the intensity measure for this relative distance process, and it looks like this, 2 times r to the minus 3. We can do a little bit more. In the Poisson case, we can calculate the probability generating functional, which is of this form, and from that, we can calculate all the moment densities, now which look quite simple. Now, if we start with the non-Poisson process, now things get a little bit harder. Now, the probability generating function will be of this form, where we need the probability generating functional of the underlying, now the two-dimensional base station process, as per the reduced Paul measure. Now, this has to do now with Jeff's question. So the MISR is relevant for Rayleigh fading. We have seen that. No, but how about we have other types of fading, or we have diversity in the system? No. For that, we generalize this MISR as follows. So we take the nth moment of this random variable, and then we take the nth root. So for a Poisson cellular network with arbitrary fading, we can calculate this nth moment here. So that's a sum with these Bell polynomials here, where we have all the different moments of the fading random variable here. So that's a very nice benign expression. And of course, if we just had Rayleigh fading, then we could get these moments by just taking the appropriate derivatives of the Laplace transform. So the value here is really that this is an expression for arbitrary fading. But now, if we just take one particular term in this sum, namely the one where k is equal to n, we get a very nice and very tight lower bound, which tells us that this generalized MISR is just the MISR for n equal to 1 times n factorial to the 1 over n. So that's just the MISR here, and that's the extra term, and see how this behaves as a function of n. Now, this, what's nice about this bound, because this is the term that actually does not involve any higher moments of the fading random variables, so it does not depend on the fading. And in addition, as alpha goes to 2, it becomes asymptotically tight. So here are a couple of plots. So first, we focus just on Rayleigh fading, but we calculate these higher moments of the ISR. So for n equal to 1, that's the standard curve here. Of course, then the exact curve and the lower bound matches. So the second lower bound is just a tiny, small improvement. No, that is not that relevant. For n equal to 2, we get this, and this is the simple lower bound. For n equal to 5, now the gap increases a little bit. Now, we generalize the fading to Nakagami M fading. So now we have two parameters. Now n, that's the exponent of the ISR we are interested in, and M is the parameter that we have in Nakagami fading. So for n equal to 1, the fading cannot matter because it's averaged all out. Now for n equal to 2, we see there is a little bit of a gap between the fading parameter 1 to 10. If n is equal to 5, the gap grows a little bit. So this is as a function of the pass loss exponent. Again, on the right side, we see this generalized MISR as a function of n, and we see that this appears to grow essentially linearly in n. So this is m equal to 1, m equal to 2, m equal to 10. Here we have the lower bound that does not depend on the fading. So we can already see that as we let m grow, make it really large, now we have to converge something that stays above this lower bound, but it's also going to be lower than the black curve, so this is going to converge to some non-trivial limit. And we can actually show that for large n, this generalized MISR is essentially proportional to n. So for Rayleigh fading, the pre-constant is just 1 over e. So this grows with 1 over e here as we go to the right. So how do we use this to deal with general fading or diversity gains? Now here we assume that the fading is of this form, now is essentially just polynomial at zero, which includes, for example, Nakagami fading. Now, in this case, asymptotically, you know, the success probability would be of this form, and we see where this mth moment of the ISR comes in. So if we now calculate this gain relative to the Poisson deployment as a function of this m here, now we see that we have these mth moments here, and then we have to take the mth root, which means we just again have a ratio of these generalized MISRs here on the right. Now, and then, of course, the approximation follows like this. So whether m stems from fading or from a diversity scheme, now this is the kind of calculation we need to do to handle these general cases. No? So we can only shift curves that have the same diversity, underlying diversity gain. No? Because otherwise, as Jeff pointed out, no, we cannot compare them because they cannot possibly be shifted versions of each other. So if in general this generalized MISR grows roughly in proportion to MISR 1, no, this would show that the gain for parameter M here, or diversity M, is essentially the same as the gain for diversity 1, or Rayleigh fading, which shows that the gain at 0 would be insensitive to the fading statistics. No. So we don't know a lot more about this yet, but if we plot the curve, going back to the square lattice again, now with Nakagami fading, and we just take the Poisson curve for Nakagami fading, and we shift it by the same gain that we had before for Rayleigh fading. Now, so we apply the same 3 dB gain, and we see that we still get a very good match for all the relevant success probabilities, now above 60-65%. If we take M equal to 5, now we still we have a little bit of a gap here, but overall we are still doing quite well, especially considering the fact that these expressions are very simple. So this is all at zero. Now we need to say something about what's going on the other end, here at infinity, you know, about this possible gap there. So for that, now instead of the MISR, we introduce this other quantity, this EFIR. So we take the interference, or it's not actually the interference in this case, we just take the total received power from all the base stations. Now here we are not excluding any serving base stations, that's why we call this I infinity instead of just I as before. And we let H be a generic fading random variable. And then we define this expected fading to interference ratio as follows. So that is the definition. So we have the ratio of fading to interference. Now that's what gave the name to the acronym. We take the expectation with respect to the reduced Pahl measure, and then we take the 1 over deltas, no, the delta's root here. Now, it is easily seen that this quantity does not actually depend on the intensity of the point process, no, because this moment here is proportional to 1 over lambda. And it does not depend on the distribution of the distance to the serving base station either, because that distribution does not even enter here. No. The serving base station doesn't show up anywhere. Now, for the Poisson process with arbitrary fading, we can calculate this quantity as simply the sinc function, or raised to the 1 over delta. Of course, there is a connection here to the result by Harpreet and others, now that I think Sayan showed yesterday. Now, this sinc delta divided by theta to the delta result has to do with that. Now, so there is a connection there. Now, because both apply to arbitrary fading. Now, an arbitrary fading means includes the case of no fading. In the no fading case, the instantaneous base station association they looked at is the same as the strongest base station association on average. No, so the results have to match. So this is just essentially 1 minus delta, no, 1 minus 2 by alpha. So here is the theorem. For all stationary base station point processes where the typical user is served by the nearest base station with arbitrary fading, the tail of the success probability is of that form. So that's theta to the minus delta. And the pre-constant is this EIFR to the delta, essentially. So from that, we get the gain at infinity, now taking this ratio, where we have the result for the Poisson case here, so we get this expression here. So the immediate implication on the tail of the SIR distribution is that the asymptotic behavior at the tail is unavoidable As soon as we have a stationary point process, we have a singular pass loss law, we always get that tail. Which, by the way, also means if we try to calculate the mean SIR, it's always going to diverge. SIR does not have a finite moment. So let's see how fast this convergence actually occurs. So we take a square lattice, and we scale the success probability now by theta to the delta, which means that the product here should approach a constant. Now, the EIFR for the square lattice now cannot be calculated analytically, but we can give some bounds based on the Epstein theta function. So in this particular case, for alpha equal to 4, now we have the limit should approach EIFR to the delta, which in this case is just the square root, which is 1.19, so that would be the dashed curve here. The red solid curve is the simulation result, and we see that as soon as we are past, say, 10 dB, now we get very close. And the blue curves are the lower and upper bounds, respectively. Now, so the upper bound is not particularly great, but the lower bound is actually surprisingly tight. Now, so we can take this result here to represent the lattice, and we get a very good approximation for how this distribution behaves at the tail. So here's a summary of what we have done so far. Now we just focus on Rayleigh fading here. So as theta goes to zero, this is the success probability, and this is the gain. That's the ratio of MISRs. As theta goes to infinity for arbitrary fading, we have this result, and the gain is just the ratio of the EFIRs, where here now the PPP is in the denominator, and here in the numerator, and here it's in the denominator. And the two quantities now for the Poisson process are very simple expressions. So these are the two here, and they are efficiently obtained by simulation for arbitrary point processes. Now, on the MISR, does not involve any fading, so we just have to work with the geometry, no, and produce some realizations. So that's not bad. In the EIFR, we have the expectation with respect to the reduced Pahl measure, which actually helps us now when we are dealing with lattices, because we don't have to translate the lattice. No. If we didn't have that, if we had a standard expectation, we'd have to average over randomly translated lattices. No, but having the expectation with respect to the reduced Pahl measure fixes the point at the origin. So we only have one instance of the lattice, no, and we get the result very quickly. So here are a couple of more plots for these asymptotic gains for the square and the triangular lattices, now to compare them with those who like hexagons. So the G0, as stated before, now is insensitive to alpha, so it's essentially flat as we change alpha from 3 to 4. And we get a little bit higher gain now from the triangular lattice indicated here by the triangle, so we're doing a tiny bit better. The gain at infinity has some dependence on alpha, so it increases slightly now as we change alpha from 3 to 4. This changes from a little bit more than 2 to about 3.5. But overall, now these gains at zero and infinity are really, really close, especially for alpha equal to 3, there is essentially no difference. And here, for alpha equal to 4, there is a little bit of a gap between the gaps. Now, we try to explain a little bit the insensitivity of the gain at zero to alpha. So recall that we can write this MISR as this integral here, now with the intensity of the relative distance process. Now, so what we are plotting here is for the square lattice, we are plotting the relative densities of the relative distance processes pertaining to the square lattice and to the Poisson process. Now, for the Poisson process, this would just be a straight line. No, but the reason why we plot it this way, because at zero, no, everything has to go essentially like r to the minus 3, so we want to kind of take that effect away so that we get a more meaningful plot. Now, because of stationarity, you know, at zero, this has to go to 1. Because the other, if we take a really large ball, no, the number of points that we find in that ball has to be the same for every stationary point process. But we see, you know, as we look at the regime here close to the serving base station, we get these oscillations, which is not unexpected, no, for the lattice, because as soon as we increase the distance a little bit, we're going to include more and more points in this distance. Here is the same thing for the triangular lattice, no, so there are a little bit less fluctuations. So the point of this is that if this relative intensities were just a constant, then the MISR would not depend on the path loss exponent. It would just be 1 over wherever that constant is. So the sensitivity to alpha can only come from the excursions of this relative distance, no, compared to its average. And we see these excursions are really not that big. So overall, now these relative densities are relatively well concentrated around the average, which means in turn now that there is very little sensitivity of this gain with respect to the path loss exponent. Here is the Ginibre process, now the beta version, like Laurent discussed. So as we let beta go to zero, now we get back to the Poisson case, so we have to have gain 1 in both cases. And then we see, as we get to the original Ginibre process, we see how this gain grows nicely linearly for G0 and for G infinity also. No, it's just that the slope is a little different. No, so we get very simple and very good approximations for the gain at 0 as a function of the parameter beta by just saying, oh, this is essentially 1 plus beta half. Whereas at infinity, that's essentially 1 plus beta. No, so the solid line would be the simulation result, no, and the dashed line is just this approximation here. So we take the general Ginibre model, now we take the Poisson result, we plug in this gain, and we get a very good approximation. No, with a very simple expression now that we can very easily evaluate compared to the one I showed previously, now with infinite integrals and infinite sums and products. We can also observe, now since the square lattice has gains of 2 and 3.5, respectively, at 0 at infinity, the original Ginibre process falls quite exactly in between the Poisson process and the square lattice, both at 0 and at infinity. Now, so here we have a point process now that just really covers exactly the middle ground, now, and we have seen before that it is a point process that very well matches now, the actual deployments. So now, lastly, I'm showing some actual trajectories. Now, how does this gain G of theta look for the lattices, the square and triangular lattice? So first, for a path loss exponent of 3, so the dashed lines here, these are the asymptotic gains at 0 and at infinity. Now, the solid lines, this is a detailed simulation that shows the trajectory of the gain. So, of course, it approaches the gain here, and it approaches the gain on the other side, the asymptotic one. In between, now, there is a little dip. No? So we are getting away just a little bit from those gains. So it's not monotonic. This is more pronounced, now, when the path loss exponent is 4. So we see that the gain, now, we originally had hoped that we see a nice monotonic increase from G0 to G infinity, which means we could get nice bounds, but that's not quite the case, no, so this goes down a little bit. But this also means, in turn, no, that the gain at 0 is actually valid for a larger range of values of theta. No, because we actually have, now here at theta equal to about 5, now we have an exact match. If we shift by G0, we get an exact match again. No, it's not just that this gets more and more inaccurate. No, we get away, no, we just get away a little bit, we become accurate again, and then we go up here. So the gain here in dB, you know, goes from about 3 to about 5.5. That's as inaccurate as it can get, no, in this approximation or in this idea of shifting SIR distributions. So quite likely, you know, the gain as a function of theta is upper bounded by the maximum of the two. So if we wanted, we can take the maximum of the two gains and we would get an upper bound on the SIR distribution. No, but this is something that needs to be shown yet. Okay, in conclusion, now the world outside Poissonia is harsh. Now, I think we have seen couple of examples now of that. Even for the PPP or the HIP model, now the SIR distributions are going to be complicated, unwieldy if we are looking at advanced transmission techniques, now including MIMO, which I haven't talked about, it's just not as nice anymore. So that's why we are proposing this alternative method of shifting the Poisson curve by some gain, which is the gain at G0, which works best here. And in order to show that G0 is actually a good gain to use here or a good shift, now we have also looked at G infinity. And we have seen now while G0 is related to this MISR, G infinity is related to this EFIR, the other quantity. And we have seen that the MISR can be compactly expressed using this relative distance process, and it can be generalized for different types of fading. The same thing doesn't need to be done at the tail end because the tail is independent of the fading. So there we don't have that issue. Now, this method is relatively accurate for the entire range of theta values, and it is highly accurate as we restrict ourselves to success probability, say, above 75%. So this would be the regime of interest, actually. And of course, now this really has just started this line of work, and there's a lot more things that can and need be done in this context. Homework. So this was the problem. The pair correlation function equal to 2 on some domain. And we have already seen the solution now. We take this relative distance process pertaining to the Poisson process, and we get 2. So from slide 31, we have the second moment density of the process. We see here that's exactly twice the product of the intensities. So here is the solution. I don't think I have received a really satisfactory solution, but I have to give partial credit to a couple of people. Bartek has come up with a non-ergodic solution, which is a little bit cheating, with a mixed Poisson process, which I haven't thought about. And Paul Keeler has actually had a look at the paper, where the result is in there, and actually pointed out. So that's very resourceful, but it doesn't give full credit either. So Volker has made a comment that this can only work on a limited interval. If this has the point process had to be ergodic and actually be defined on the whole line, this could not work. So I guess I'll have to share some chocolates with a few people later today, probably. Yeah, a few references. That's it. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much.
We have time for discussion. Any questions, comments? Okay.
So whenever you're looking at coordination, silencing base stations,
there's
actually a rate loss happening in the system.
Yes.
Lots of people are not.
Yeah.
So is outage probability or the success probability the right metric to look at? One has to somehow bring in the rate loss.
Yes.
Multiply it together.
Definitely, but in order to study this trade-off, you need to have this as an ingredient. You need to know how much the gain would be for a user, and then you need to trade this off with the reduced number of users you can serve.
Yes. I agree to that, but the actual metric would be something like a product of the rate times the log of 1 plus SIR.
Yeah, that's a possibility. Yeah.
And then, because the multiplication is a non-trivial thing which is happening here, you might actually see different statistics rather than taking the loss separately, taking the gain separately and multiplying it together.
Maybe. No, I still think that this is a necessary ingredient. Because in order to address this question, you need to know what you could get. If you didn't have to worry, if you are in a purely coverage-oriented world and you don't worry about capacity, then I think this is something that you should know.
Right.
And then you can see, how this impacts the capacity or the numbers of users that you can serve. Yeah. But I certainly agree, that is a necessary step, for an operator who needs to know whether this is worth doing. Yeah,
because the gains one gets could be completely mitigated.
Yeah, sure. That's why I'm saying, here we are focusing on coverage.
Right.
No, we just have one user, and we try to make the typical user happy. No. Without blocking, now addressing the problem that he might be blocked.
It's a net loser for rate for a macro cell only network. But if you have embedded small cells, then you get parallelism, and then it's a winner in rate. Because you're increasing the SIR, right, which is inside the log, but the exact division in front of the log. And so it's a net loser for rate. What do you show you?
But then there's the issue of load balancing, because some cells are like heavily loaded, some cells are very lightly loaded. So you might be actually easier to turn off things which are lightly loaded in favor of something which is heavily loaded. So that's also interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Comments, questions?
You have compared this the G0 and G infinity. Can you say something about what's the maximum duration between the exact value and your approximation?
I mean, that really depends on the path loss exponent. Now, you can make the gap really large if you make the path loss exponent really large. No, but the thing is, in some sense, the triangular lattice is the most extreme case of a repulsive process. No, so if you say, I'm only interested at path loss exponent of 4 or 4.5 at most, then we already know the results. No, then we know that, the gap now goes from 3 dB to 5.5 dB, and it cannot get any worse, because it cannot get any better now than a triangular lattice. Now, what I haven't shown, there's a slight sensitivity possibly of this gain at infinity to the fading. No, but it would be quite minor. No, but that's a question we haven't addressed yet.
Also, in terms of accuracy, will there be certain geometry that give you very bad accuracy? For example, if there's some clustering occurs.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, now you could apply the same framework to a clustered process. You get negative gains in dB. Now you gain smaller than 1. Essentially, now you get the curve shifted to the left, which you might have to do in order to address the capacity problem. And you have a hotspot, and you have 100 users now sitting right here. Then you might have to serve them with multiple base stations so they get clustered. And if you want them all to be active, then you're shifting the curve to the left. But then, in contrast, now you get the capacity gain. You can actually serve all these people, and you might be better off in terms of the overall system performance.
Okay. Any further comments, questions? Seems not to be the case, so let's thank Martin again.
Thank you.